RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. So, I'm glad that I didn't cast my ballot for Moira, because I feel like that really would have just been, you know, I really would have just thrown away my vote.
I sent it in early.
Yeah, that's too bad. I also feel like that I'm not sure that's how city politics works. Like, oh, it's been a week since my running mate died and I just become mayor by default.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I think you might see that happen more often if that's how it really worked, actually.
I'm wondering if because they shoot this up in Canada, they're getting influenced by who is it? Rob Ford's antics as mayor of Toronto.
Now, see, that would be an interesting season three here. Sebastian Blood gains some weight.
Starts smoking crack.
Starts smoking crack, eating lots of ribs. You know, that was interesting. Interesting.
And doing some.
That's Cousin Blood. That's
Cousin Blood. Oh, boy. Well, an interesting episode of Arrow this week, but I feel like it wasn't all it could be. But again, after last week's revelation and shocking finale, this week I don't know. I wasn't expecting really much more this week, because they have to kind of take a step back and build everything back up again for the finale. I was talking to some friends, and it's you can't keep the level of drama and anxiety at that level and then make the season finale feel meaningful. You have to back off and take us down. And that's kind of what this episode did. It laid the groundwork, and I would think the next episode should be the season finale, but we've got two more episodes. So it feels like there's even lower we can go.
I think this episode served two story purposes. One is, you know, you can't have an episode like last week and then just jump back in at the same pace, at the right. same, you know, step. You got to have that sense of shock and grief. You know, you got to have that silent scene in the hospital where Radar comes in, tell everybody that, you know, Colonel Blake's helicopter crashed.
Oh,
so
no.
you got to,
I thought I was Oliver, just over that, Josh.
I'm sorry.
It's been like 25, 30 years.
It's tragic.
And I just,
you know, I've started, you know, putting on dresses and trying to get out of, you know, doing work around here. But
you like the way they clinger to your figure.
So that's one purpose I think it served. You have to show that sense of shock and grief, especially in Oliver, because that is so key to his character. And then the other thing is, it didn't even feel like an episode to me. It felt like the beginning of a much bigger story. Of a movie. It really did. It felt like the beginning of a movie. I felt like I'm at an intermission of one story rather than the cliffhanger of a TV show series.
That is a great point. That is, I hadn't really put that together, but that is, I feel that way as well.
Well, I mean, a lot of times, you know, at the end of, especially at the end of Arrow, you're just like, but at the end of this, I'm like, oh wait, that's it? I mean, it just felt like there was going to be more. Like, okay, wait, the army's right there, and she's about to kill him, and she's about to him, and Felicity's on the phone, and you know what?
And then they just took a breath.
Happen? Yeah, and then it's the 100 or whatever that show is.
Yeah, like, we were watching it, and they just, you know, it's like dun 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 boom, and it puts up the Arrow logo, and my son's like, oh wait, is it done, or were they going to come back? You know, he was asking, or are they going to come back for the tag? And then boop, that's it. It's like,
yep,
oh yep,
that's
we're done.
How I felt too.
What?
So in a way, you know, that was good. That I think this episode served its purpose of that, because that's how it felt. I'm anticipating next week a lot.
So I made some speculation last week that this episode might serve as sort of a companion piece to the season opener, City of Heroes. Not so much, at least in title. We got some information about what it takes to be a hero, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. But why don't you tell us about what we got here in City of Blood?
Okay. Well, this was episode 21. I cannot believe we are in episode 21, season 2 already. City of Blood, as it's called. April 30th, 2014 was when we first sat down to watch this. It was written by Holly Harold and directed by Michael Schultz. So, okay. First of all, before we go any further, mm-hmm. maybe we have a moment of silence.
Yes.
For the late Moira Queen. Except for the inauguration of Mayor Sebastian Blood, of course.
Oh, of course. Right.
Going on same time there. The Queen family is just collapsing, and Oliver is mourning all alone. But Felicity and Diggle will track him down with the help of Amanda Waller, of course, when he needs something. They have good computers there. So,
really nice. They're sexy.
I think, well, they must be, because Felicity was pawing them.
<Ooh. laughs>
Would you stop fondling my computer? Anyway, the brooding break may have been a little bit too long, though, because Isabel Rocheff she's come back.
What?
She's taken over Verdant from Thea. She's kicked out Thea. She now enjoys full control over the Queen Fortune. They've lost their house. They've lost pretty much everything. So Oliver is going to sacrifice himself to save everyone. But that is until Laurel shows up and she reveals that she knows his little secret. She explains how Blood is involved, and she convinces him to fight back.
Yes.
But the Mirakuru army is ready, and it's already on the move.
So I like the way that he did have to dart back to the Arrow Cave for that revelation there. And then at the end, my wife asked, you know, did Oliver survive? And I'm like, no, he's dead. And that's the end of the series. They're going to actually have a spinoff next year called Felicity. And it's going to be entirely unrelated about some girl and, you know, all of her problems. And
I'd still watch it. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Felicity, a Felicity podcast.
Yeah. I'm sure we would have stuff to talk about on that. So, there were things I liked about this episode, and then there was stuff that I felt that they just couldn't get to talk about that seemed it's just kind of begging for, you know, discussion. So, I mean, hopefully we can cover what the show wasn't able to cover, I guess, at this point. But first off, as you said, the episode's called City of Blood. And I think this, again, great titles for their episodes. I think literally this title works because Sebastian Blood is now the mayor, so it is the City of Blood, right? He was promised, Slade had promised him the city and that he would become mayor, and as Sebastian points out in this episode, Slade delivers on his promises. Didn't he make you a promise too? Oh, I think that's going to happen. So Blood, you know, seems to know more what's going on now.
Yes, he does. Now, didn't he, I'm not going to jump ahead too much, but he didn't know who Oliver was. So how did he know that Slade had made him promises? Or I guess maybe he just assumed it was just promises to Oliver.
Well, that was, I believe, after the point when Oliver revealed that he was the Arrow.
Right.
And I'm sure that, you know, he's, because Slade was talking about bringing the Arrow. I don't know. I don't know. At this point, again, I don't know who knows what, when.
Okay. I was just curious. That doesn't necessarily ruin anything for me. It still makes sense if you think about it from a certain point of view. But, yeah. So, definitely, literally, it is Blood's city now. A good thing his name wasn't, you know, Van Mierendonk or something like that, because City of Van Mierendonk isn't nearly as intimidating. But
I don't know. That's you're going to be pretty embarrassed when there's going to be a Van Mierendonk villain come out next season, and I'm going to have well, I mean, this is totally from the DC universe. He was part of the Schlammenflagen, you know, squad
uprising.
yeah, whatever. So. But the title also works figuratively as well, as in a city of blood, as in the city will run thick with blood. Slade's destruction, Blood's destruction. They are bringing down on the city. They've got their Miraku army. They've got the which, you know, you start off thinking, oh, it's just. Look, they've very graciously gathered the entire army in this one little area so that we can just bring the roof down on everybody. Wait a second. No, there's somebody in the train station. Oh, there's somebody in the police station. Oh, there's this chick in spandex, you know, dancing around with knives and stuff now. So it's like...
Yeah, they didn't show it, but there was also one in the Apple store. They didn't show that one. And in the Big Belly Burger. So they were everywhere.
That would be great. I would love to see some more of that. Well, the thing is now it's like they're everywhere. So, you know, it's like I said at the beginning, it looks really grim for everybody, I think, for the next episode. And we're going to have to take everybody down still even further, like we were talking about throughout the season when we thought they brought Laurel down. They continue to bring Laurel down further. Like, how low can we go? And I think for a while there, I was thinking Oliver, like, they've brought him down. It's like, nope, they keep bringing him down further and further. I mean, he seems about as low as he can get this episode, up to the point, you know, I mean, he's ready to sacrifice himself to die to save everybody, right? And that seems to be like the big theme for this episode. I think it was. Was it Peter? Is that the guy's name from the submarine?
Peter was on the submarine. Peter
when
had radiation
time
poisoning.
To change. Excuse me. That different Peter, right?
Yes. No, Peter. Peter was suffering from radiation sickness that Ivo had given him.
Now, is that what Ivo? Remember, we were talking about what was on Ivo's shoulder the other week.
Oh, that's right.
Was that they look similar? Was that radiation?
They did look
poisoning,
similar.
Maybe?
I bet it was. Maybe he was also going to use the Mirakuru to cure himself.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, which I'm waiting for Ivo to come back. And so, like, the season finale is going to show up, and Ivo is going to step out into Starling City to confront Malcolm Merlyn. It's like the all-star week of everybody that Oliver's killed coming back to life to...
And here comes Count Vertigo. Oh. And here comes, so it's like a big, parade of ghosts.
But yeah, but Peter.
And there's Deadshot's eye coming back.
Well, Deadshot and Deathstrokes, I'm just putting this together. They both lost eyes due to him.
Between
now.
The two of them, maybe that's one superhero right there. That's.
Anyway, what I was Peter. Getting to was Peter. Peter, he basically encapsulated kind of the theme for the entire episode, which you hear Oliver say this before, and, you know, he's like, I heard this wise man once say this, and then it's like this dude on the submarine is like, yeah, man, I hear, like, the essence of heroism is to die so others can live. You're like, what? What?
That's the wise man?
That's where he got it from, is from some schmuck. But... I enjoyed that scene as one of those little pushes that Oliver's character gets from on the show, where it's like, you know, well, why didn't we know about this before? Well, we didn't know about this before, again, because the writers hadn't come up with it, which is the problem with having flashbacks every episode, where they're constantly having to write new backstory at the same time that they're writing the current story. But,
dang, we need somebody to sacrifice himself, but we're out of main characters.
Yeah. Well, so in the scene where they're on the submarine and Oliver's like, we've got a torpedo, right? And it's like, yes, but it is kind. You have to steer from inside. It's like, well, how does the person inside protect themselves from the explosion? You do not. And I'm like, oh, no, poor Oliver. He's going to – oh, no, wait a second. Oh, no, poor Sarah. She's going to – no, wait. Oh, poor Russian dude. It's like, no, wait, he's in the future too. Oh, well, sorry, unnamed dude in the background.
Unnamed dude. His name's Peter.
Peter. We now know he's Peter. His name was Peter. His name was Peter.
And upon this torpedo, I shall build my heroism definition. So they had to have Peter so he could sacrifice himself, but he had to give Oliver that little speech. But Oliver, it kind of sounded like a big fat chicken.
It was. I thought it was great staying in where Oliver's character is at that point on the island, right? It's like, no, man, I'm not really being a hero because, like, I really just wanted to get home. And, you know, Peter's like, yeah, but you got to understand you are doing more than that. Like, it's obviously going to take Oliver, you know, some time and a number of people telling him that, you know what, you are doing the right thing. You are making those steps towards becoming that hero. And he still is, even though, you know, we are watching a show about him being a hero. He's still not completely there. And
yeah,
our discussion
clearly
has been this entire season about him trying to be that better person, trying to make that step to become the hero. And Felicity is even pointing it out. It's like, you've done a great job not killing people. I don't think you should be dropping, you know, a ton of concrete on top of them or whatever. So.
Yeah, they're not men. But he did, though. He sounded like kind of a chicken in that section. I mean, I don't know. I agree with you. It fit his character for the time, but
yeah.
I thought he should have maybe considered it a little bit more. I don't know. I don't know if I could make that decision. I've got Sarah. I've got to get home to my family. But it's like, no, I'm not really that kind of guy. But hey, good luck, Peter.
Yeah. And I think they have to make it because he is growing, you know, a little bit closer to the era, to the Oliver that we see off island in the present. So I don't know. I feel like they're having to exaggerate it maybe just a little bit more so that you realize he's not the same guy. You know, you are watching a different version of the character because honestly, I think first off, I'm realizing that Stephen Amell is a much more amazing actor than I have previously given him credit for. He pulls off these different levels of emotion. Like last week when he found out that his girlfriend supposedly lost the baby and the whole emotional change that he rolled through, you know, and I just saw it over his eyes. The fact that he does all this physical work, but he can also do these really intimate scenes and play these emotions. And he's actually playing two characters in the show. He's playing present day Oliver, the brooding Oliver that, you know, is worldwise. And then he's playing the spoiled frat boy that is learning to make his way in the world.
Well, I'd say he's also playing, you know, Arrow.
Oh, and the Arrow
as well.
Right. Okay. Good point. So, I mean, you know, he's not just a beautiful abdomen, you know, to look at. He actually has some acting chops there and everything as well. But I'm just realizing that he, you know, he's really playing Island Oliver in an entirely different mindset than he's playing Starling City Oliver or the Arrow.
I would agree with that. And he's doing a very good job at it. And I think that was more of a, well, it's kind of like you said, it was a flashback of convenience for this episode, but it did move that story along as well. Cause it kind of figured, you know, they found out how they were able to get that submarine going again. And,
they're really just moving slowly on the whole island piece.
They really are.
Yeah. Okay. Get the submarine. I mean, they went really fast and there was that one episode we got, I think pretty much all island.
I think, This entire second season, the flashbacks have encompassed probably just a few days on the island. I mean, it doesn't feel like much longer than that.
I think it's a little bit longer than that because we had them getting out to the freighter and Oliver being stuck on there for a little while and then having to get back off and then getting back on. And it's not as real time as we saw in the first season, which encompassed a lot. You know, it might have been the full like 7 months or something like
that. Yeah, his hair grew a lot the first year on the island.
Yes.
So, you know, it was a little bit of time. But anyway, the essence of heroism that Peter was telling him about, you know, is to die so that others can live. But did it feel to you, do you think Oliver was just giving up? Do you feel like he's just lost and he's giving up to Slade? Or do you think it's more than that? I mean, do you really think he's trying to be heroic? Do you think he really believes that's going to save the people he loves? Or is he just done? Is he just out of ideas?
I think he's out of ideas. He is, you know, he's remembering, a quote from his past. And I think he's sad. I mean, you know, he's just lost his mom and he's ruined his relationship with his sister and people are running out on him. All these relationships are breaking around him. And, you know, it probably just seems like, you know what, it's probably just easier this way, even though I think Slade's even said as much, I'm not going to kill you. Like, that is Slade's purpose, is to destroy his life and make him as miserable as possible and not kill him, because that would be the easy way out. Like, you know, that the honorable thing would be for, you know, Slade to kill him, and that's not, you know, where this is going. So I still feel that Oliver is not really using his head. He's still kind of an idiot when it comes to, you know, just looking at what's going on. It's like, okay, you know, fool me once, shame on me, or fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. And this is like the third or fourth time he's been got this season. But he's being played emotionally, and I think that is probably harder for him to cope with than being outsmarted or outplayed in a physical match or something like that.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. Anytime you play on Oliver's emotions, he's always been like that. And Slade knows that. That's why Slade's doing that. That's why he's using that against him, because Slade knows how emotional Oliver is.
Yeah.
So it was the perfect, you know, weapon against Oliver. But I kind of agree. I felt like he's sort of just at his wits end. He's just sort of giving up. But it took Laurel, to kind of shake him out of that and go, hey, come on, man, come on. Being a hero is to do all that you can until you succeed or die trying.
Right.
It's not just sacrificing yourself. It's do everything you can until you die.
Right. I mean, sacrifice is sacrifice and heroism is more than that. And speaking of that sequence, which I thought was powerful, and then Laurel's like, I'm coming with you. And he's like, nope, because remember when you came with me last time, somebody got stabbed with a piece of rebar. So he's like, he wants to keep her out of it, and she's like, okay, but you want to keep me safe, but what about them? And, you know, Oliver's saying, it started with the three of them, which I thought was cool. It was kind of that, all right, you know what? I'm down to my bare minimum here. But then Laurel shows up anyway.
Did you have any doubt?
No,
she was just going to show up.
She's like sneaking up behind him.
She ended up saving him, I suppose, which is...
She did. She saved him. I just kept yelling at Oliver to tap out when he was being choked by that guy. It's like, just tag team.
At first I thought maybe she would stick around the Arrow Cave and like help him on the computers there. But when she looked at the computers, which they miraculously got repaired, maybe they're under warranty still.
Where are they getting the money?
That's why I was wondering. Maybe they have some backup. Maybe before he lost all his money, he just bought a bunch of extras. But But you know, the other thing, and from a logical standpoint, for not bringing Laurel, and he could have used this against. Look, Felicity and Diggle know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They've been trained. I mean, even Felicity has.
She's getting better.
She's getting better, not necessarily physically, and she doesn't need it, as we saw in this, which was a brilliant scene where she was interrogating that bodyguard. But anyway, that's a good argument to bring Felicity and Diggle because they know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. That whole bodyguard scene, well, the part with Dig getting him on the elevator.
Yes.
And then the interrogation scene, it's like, oh, you'll wish we had tortured you. So that was really
hello.
Fun.
I'll be your interrogator this evening.
Yeah. Ah, bitch with Wi-Fi. those characters, and I'm glad Diggle had more scenes in this episode as well too, because I'm always liking the action that he gets there. So they are really looking up to being, you know, heroes themselves, because they are continuing, you know, Oliver's the one who's in trouble. Oliver's the one that's losing his fortune. Oliver is the one that has the vendetta against him. And these other characters are unfortunately caught up in the wake of that. But, you know, and, you know, it's just, maybe it's just them being good friends and not necessarily, I don't know if I would even consider it being heroic what they're doing, though it is
really?
from a degree. I mean, I'm not going to discount that, but you know, they've got this friend of theirs that it's like he's got all this crap just raining down on him, and you know, he's ready to give up, and you know, they're being supportive, they're being good friends, and they're like, you know, you got to get back in there and you got to keep going. You know, I know that. You know, it's when you have issues and stuff, I know it's not, I'm pretty sure it's not, you know, one-eyed mercenaries, you know, coming to kill you and stuff like that. And
not this year.
Right. So, but you know, I'm like, go get him, Josh.
Yeah. You're always there. You're supportive. So.
Yeah.
but I do think, I mean, I agree with you. I think they're standing by Oliver because they're his friend and they're very, loyal and they owe him and vice versa. But I also think it shows the degree of heroism between Diggle and Felicity, is that they are doing whatever they can to save the city, to stop Blood, to stop Slade. So I mean, I really do think that they're being heroic and doing it for the right reasons as well.
Mm-hmm.
So but all the other things that you said are I also think come into play.
Yeah, I mean, I think all. It just so happens that their friendship and the right reasons all really align really nicely.
Yes.
Right. It's the drama would come in their interpersonal relationship would be if the friendship was going one way and the reasons went another direction and they had to make a decision about, do you continue to be a good friend or do you do what needs to get done or something like that. So I'm glad I like seeing them all come together as that, you know, as that team again, because Oliver's group had gotten a little big. And hopefully still will. We were waiting for Roy to wake up during the entire episode and like freak Laurel out. So, you know, that hasn't happened. It would have been a nice little throwback to when he freaked Felicity out last week. So I thought they were going to do a little, you know, another thing like that. But I think they're just keeping Roy on ice until they can get the serum created.
Yes.
So we'll see. Let's see. What do I want to do next? I guess briefly, I just want to mention here that I bet Thea really wishes she had signed that paperwork now.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, yeah, so Verdant doesn't belong to you. I mean, this is great for, as I'm sure as you're enjoying as a fan of the Green Arrow comics, Oliver Queen loses his fortune in the comics. So this, you know, I know this has been building up for a while, but boy, this seems really, you know, this is a very hostile sudden takeover here, like literally and figuratively.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's pretty sudden. It's his whole fortune. You know, the company maybe wasn't quite as quick because he did the whole thing, but, I do like that. I think it is a throwback to the comic. I think that's where this part of the story came from is from when Oliver lost his money in the comic.
Well, and isn't it great that immediately after Verdant is repossessed, which means that, wow, wait, how do they continue to come and go down below when you've got, you know, other people taking it over? That we find out that Oliver has another hideout, which appears to be some old hotel room somewhere or something like that. I couldn't really tell what it was, but it looked
like it almost seemed like an abandoned building of some kind,
like a tenement is what I want to say.
Yeah,
but I think that's what all the it's probably a. It's going to be the new base of operations, I'm guessing, for season three, because the Arrow Cave will just not be usable anymore. Boy, I'd hate to see the Wi-Fi costs and, you know, everything happening. It'll be like a college dorm or something. They'll be all hanging out there.
I'll be just sitting on pizza boxes and...
It's in a apartment building. They got people across the floor. It's like, Mr. Oliver, can you keep the noise down, please? You know, sorry, Rosemary.
The salmon lather is making my plates fall off the wall.
I thought that was a little hokey. But...
Well, it's a little convenient. I'm like, he's in his other hideout or what? Did she call it a hideout?
She called it. Well, she said. He went back to his little island, which, you know, it's like, wait a second, did he really go back to the island? Because that's what he did between season one and season two. It's like, literally, he went back to the island. I'm like, oh, my God, he did not fly all the way back to China at now. Like, so I'm glad to see he didn't go that far.
Yeah, me too.
But, yeah, I actually think they called it the lair or his other lair or something like that. So, and supposedly he's been using it off and on, according to
Amanda Waller,
yeah, Fats Waller, but she's not Fats in this one, so
no,
Skinny Waller. I also wanted to find out. Okay, so I just want to run through a couple things. I'm going back to the flashback here for just a second.
Okay,
Ivo was killed. Oliver and basically everybody else that escaped the Amazo, I believe, everyone that's still alive was on the submarine. And he sends Sarah off because, of course, he didn't want to have her potentially injured if this whole stunt with the torpedo didn't work. And so it does work. They get the submarine free so they can go blast the Amazo and turn it into a wreckage like we saw back in the opening of the episode, episode one of season two. And then he calls Sarah and, Oliver, help me! Which we know she's got to go away at some point here to get trained with the League of Assassins, but What on earth do you think happened? I'm figuring it's probably Slade because I think that's the only person left. But
only person left that would get her.
Yeah, I mean, what, did she fall in a nest of spiders or something? I mean, I don't. What what do you think we're going to find out when we cut back to? Because obviously there will probably be flashbacks. I'm guessing on the next two episodes when we come back next episode. What flashback are we getting with Sarah? What's going on?
Well, my guess it has something to do with Slade, which is why they end up probably needing to attack him or whatever. But the other possibility is that maybe somehow she gets to the League of Assassins through this. Maybe it's somebody, you know, connected to the League of Assassins, I guess. But, I mean, the only thing we've seen so far, any indication on the island that anybody's there is them and Slade. So I would guess that it's Slade.
Okay.
So he's going to be holding her, I guess, and
yeah,
they'll have to, I don't know.
And in the future, or in the present day, we know she's gone off to get an old friend, and the more I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking that's going to be the League of Assassins, group, or at least, you know, get Nyssa back for that. So, you know, we'll see that, I don't know, next episode or the finale. So we'll see what happens there. I'm just curious. It's just, again, it seemed like, you know, it was all kind of quick and convenient, and they're really trying to draw that flashback storyline. Like, I think they could have finished the flashback storyline 3 or 4 episodes ago, but they've been really stretching it out to
they're
coincide.
Using it. Yeah, they're using it for the
dramatic tension.
Yeah, not even dramatic tension, just the connection to the theme, you know, the connection to the life lesson that Oliver's learning to be a hero.
Right.
In this case. But, I mean, also, there's always some sort of connection to the flashback as whatever's happening present day.
I really wish they would bring the flashback. Thanks for bringing that up.
It will be coming. Flash will be coming.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so.
He's slow. Give him a break.
He's still in a coma. Oh, my gosh, he's still in a coma. I really like this next point that you put in our notes, so I'm going to let you bring this up, because we had a little joke about this going here and while we were watching the episode.
Okay, so you know, if every time that I I need to spy on my mare just to make sure he's on the up and up, you know, I get on Craigslist, see if I can find a little computer hacking broadcaster chip. Yeah. it's got a short range, though. You got to hook it at least, you know, within 2-3 feet, maybe on the bottom side of a desk.
Yeah.
So that's what Laurel did. I'm sure she ordered one of those things. Got the little tracking device and very slyly, I thought, slid that right under Sebastian Blood's desk. So he is never going to notice her put that there. What he might notice is the flashing red light that it emits as it's looking into all of his personal files.
you know, they got a warrant for it, right?
Yeah, I'm sure, dude.
Shut up. Yeah.
the glowing, it really, really threw me off.
I was waiting for them to, like, you know, zoom in on it and you hear boop, 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 boop. And it's like, what? I was like, okay. It would be worse if it was making noise, I guess. But
here's what I want to see in the deleted scenes on these DVDs. I want to see just a scene later on in the day. some random, you know, office worker comes in. Mr. Blood, would you like your coffee? Sir, why is your desk glowing? I don't know. Anyway, that was just a little. I think we could have figured out that she put something under there. They didn't need to show us it was glowing. That was just a little point that they made to show us what she did. But she's good. I think we got it.
Right. Well, and then the fact that it's not even like Felicity's technology. It's like something that Laurel got from, like you said,
Felicity wouldn't have been stupid enough for a glow one.
So she's got this thing that it's. Again, it's something that a DA or an assistant DA would be able to get and then take to the police, and they are able to hack into the computer and whatever. I mean, yeah. They were really stretching the bounds of credibility on that. But.
Yeah, a little bit.
So,
I mean, that would have been easier earlier in the season when she had to sneak into the, you know, the file office there, the big warehouse with all the files.
Yep.
If she had one of those little glowy things then, that would have been a heck of a lot easier. But, whatever.
It takes a while. It's not just instantaneous. You got to order these things. Sometimes they're back ordered.
Oh, I see. They're out of stock.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense, I suppose. Okay. Either way, hey, it worked pretty well, and she had good evidence for against Blood. One thing it did show about Blood, despite being the psychopathic, you know, maniac, and power hungry, deviant supervillain. He's an organized guy.
Oh, his files were immaculate.
Absolutely. And you know what? He plans ahead. I mean, you know, he wrote that letter of condolence days before Moira died. So he was really, he didn't want to wait to the last minute.
Of course not.
Sometimes that stuff can sneak up on you. So.
Right, because, I mean, he's got his day job, and he's got to go down to the cave or the sewers at night and, you know, lead an army. I mean, it takes a lot out of a guy.
You know what he did? I'm sure he was doing the way I do show notes. You know, he was probably just eating breakfast one day, you know, drinking a cup of coffee and eating a bowl of Fruit Loops, and he's sitting on his iPhone, on Google Docs or something, typing this letter. Dear Queen family, you know, my condolences go out to you. Oh, stupid autocorrect. Okay.
Yeah, I can just see him there with a slurping the milk out of his Fruit Loops.
Love Sebastian Blood. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm derailing us from the seriousness
cool,
of the show. But
because I did want to talk about Blood next, because I thought I'm kind of torn about this scene. It looks like from some of the notes here that you put down that you had some issues with it too. I was really the scene I'm talking about is towards the end. Oliver gets told by Laurel that Blood's involved, like, mm-hmm. and kind of spills it, right? Spills the beans on the Blood.
ew.
So, yeah. The fava beans. And so he confronts him at, obviously, his favorite Chinese restaurant, maybe? I don't know what it was. But he tells his one bodyguard, and the fact that he's now married, he's only got the one bodyguard, that seems kind of weird. They didn't sweep the place. Oliver's sitting there, and, you know, it's like, okay, this is great. This is going to be an awesome confrontation.
First of all, I'm not sure, even had they swept the place, why they would stop Oliver from being there. I mean, they don't have any reason to suspect him unless Blood told him, you know, told them to watch out for Oliver or something. But I don't know why he would have had any reason to worried about Oliver.
That's true. Yeah. Well, but okay. So, but after what Oliver says, then there's total reason to suspect Oliver. So,
well, yes.
But you know, Oliver's, you know, sits down and is like, "Yeah, so you're mayor now. That's great." And I'm like, "All right, we're gonna get to it." And then he's just like, "Yeah, I'm the arrow." And I'm like, "Wow, there we go. Just tell anybody your secret." It's not a secret if you tell everybody on the show.
It's not exactly a secret.
But then, you know, Blood's reaction was just like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense. But the thing that I got out of this entire thing, so Blood is now, Blood still has the leg up, but not why you would think after watching the scene. After you watch the scene, you know, Oliver picks up the knife and Blood's like, what are you going to do, stab the mayor right here in the restaurant? Come on, dude, you can't do that. And you're like, okay, yeah, that's a good point. Oliver needs to take a back seat. Blood points out that he's gotten everything that was promised to him. You know, everything is coming to fruition. And Blood knows Oliver's secret now. But Oliver still does not realize that the man in the skull mask, who's working with Slade, and Sebastian Blood, who's working with Slade, are the same person. Right? He still hasn't put that together. And I don't know that that's necessarily a big puzzle piece for him. But at this point, it just seems really weird that they haven't given that connection to Oliver. Because that seems like a big deal. It's like, oh yeah, Blood's a real bad guy because he's working with Slade, and Slade's got this Mirakur army because he's working with this dude in the skull mask. So it's like Blood to Slade to the dude in the skull mask. But I think that Oliver, once he puts together the fact that Blood is the dude in the skull mask and is the one that's been doing all the stuff with the Mirakur, I mean, that's super escalation right there. That's, you know, everything that needs to be said. There just seems like he has... He should be figuring this out at this point. I don't know.
Yeah, he should. Yes, I agree completely.
Yeah.
He should have known. My big problem with that scene, I mean, I guess it wasn't a problem. I just don't, it's something I don't understand. Maybe you can clear it up for me. Why confront him in the first place? What was he there to do with Blood? Did he think maybe Blood would give him some information or... I mean, was he just distracting Blood so they could kidnap the guard and get the information from the guard who was more likely to give it to him? I don't understand what his purpose was. What was the goal?
So this was after Oliver decided to submit himself to Slade, but then was rescued by I'm guessing it was Diggle, right? And then Laurel told him everything, so then he kind of went on the offensive, right? I just want to make sure I'm getting the timeline right here.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's after Laurel had told him that Blood was involved and that Blood's a bad guy.
That is an excellent point. Like, what was he trying to figure? I mean, obviously they need.
I just don't know. I mean, he didn't really go there to get any information from him. It was more just like to intimidate or threaten him or something. And then he ends up telling him the truth. So, and what purpose does that serve? I don't know. I was just a little bit confused about why Oliver was there. It seemed to make matters worse.
Yeah.
Rather than better for Oliver.
Well,
he lost his temper, couldn't do anything about it. And
yeah, I think Sebastian, he was trying to do some intimidation, like you were saying. But then, yeah, it kind of showed that he didn't think things through all the way, as has been his modus operandi kind of through most of the season.
Yeah, that's true.
And it does seem like it was that they were doing that so Diggle could get this guard, the information from him about where the underground or where the bad guys are all going to meet. Where's the secret? And assuming that his bodyguard would know this. I don't know that you. It's this whole episode's unraveling. The more we're pulling on it here, I feel like. I mean, not that it was a horrible episode, but it.
No, and that scene put some definite dramatic tension between Blood and Oliver.
Oh, it was a great scene, but yeah, I feel that most of the episodes, however tenuous the plot points are, there's at least a motivation for the scene.
Right.
And the motivation for the scene was we got to get these two characters to talk to each other to, you know, take it to the next level and start having them figure out about one another. But and again, it made for a great scene, but what was the motivation for it? Obviously neither of us really can come up with.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So maybe it would become clear, but now that Blood knows, I do not see him surviving the season, in which case I don't know who becomes mayor. I guess just maybe it's just like whoever calls shotgun first gets to become mayor. It seems like Starling City has pretty easy.
Yeah, what would that be? We lost a mayor at the beginning of the season, and we'll lose another mayor at the end of the season. It's a nice bookend.
Well, and one that could have potentially been mayor last week.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I'm not sure many people are going to be volunteering for that job now. It seems dangerous. Well, okay, I shouldn't say that. Blood's not dead yet, so
right.
We'll see what happens.
Well, and then there was the guy that was called the mayor that I don't remember if he was killed.
Geez.
Or if Oliver just put him away. But
no, I think he did end up dying.
Yeah, that political appointees there in Starling City are –
the most dangerous job in the city.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, and then we get to see Isabel back, which I thought was a great scene. First off, it's like my question is, what the heck is she? Well, what the heck was Blood doing at the? It's not a party. What would you
reception?
Call the reception after the funeral. Like, Who let you in, dude? And then. Immediately after that, who let Isabel in? It's like, it's one of those big things. I'm sure everybody knows what's going on. It's easy just to kind of, walk in off the street. It's not like a...
Well, and nobody knows Blood or Isabella's are bad other than, Oliver and his friends there. And granted, he was running against her as mayor, but I think out of respect, you would go to that. And nobody knows anything about Isabel. As far as they know, she just is running the company. It wasn't even a quote unquote hostile takeover. Oliver signed it over to her, so in the public's eyes, that wouldn't be so unusual.
Yeah, yeah. It's just. I mean, I love this. Felicity and Diggle's reaction to seeing Isabel. It was like, oh my god, you're alive. So,
oops.
And then we get to see
time headshot.
And then we get to see Isabel's new wardrobe at the end of the episode. So she's decked out there in a little orange and black.
Mm.
A I'm trying to figure out what is there a team that's like orange and black? Is that a the Deathstrokes? the Ravagers?
Starling City Deathstrokes? Yeah, maybe the Ravagers. Not a fan. Now maybe once we see a little bit more of it, different angles, moving around something, but the limited that we saw, I wasn't not as big of a fan of this particular costume.
I've seen I've looked at the shot and I've seen a couple stills now, I think probably just taken from the episode. There's something amiss about the way the mask is fitting. And I can't
it makes your head kind of big.
Maybe that's what it is because of her hair under it. Maybe it's a little bulbous. She's also, I mean, no fault to Summer Glau, but she's pretty thin, and so I just didn't seem it just didn't seem like it fit very well. So I don't know. It was trying to be more like what the comic book costume looks like. And I thought they did a good job with Deathstrokes, but I'm not quite sold on Isabel's costume at this point. But again, like you said, maybe from a different angle or something, it'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, I guess since you brought it up, I right now I'm seeing the key difference from the comic versus the one on the show, and this might be hard to describe, on audio here, but okay, so the front of the mask on the bottom. Where her jaw shows.
Mm-hmm.
In the comic, it goes from her nose and angles up towards her temples. Okay,
right.
But on Arrow, it angles down and covers her cheekbones.
Oh, yes.
And that to me makes I think that makes all the difference right there. It just it looks a little bit more clownish.
Yeah, the one in the comic looks like a helmet, but the one that she's wearing is kind of like a full face mask that somebody just kind of cut the mouth section out of.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, and I don't want to be too critical of it cause I haven't seen much of it yet. But it wasn't my favorite interpretation of these things that I've seen so far. It'll work. That's the only thing I have to complain about. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another part of the episode that I laughed at, I thought it was funny in the context of the episode, was the fact that we've got all of our main characters running around and doing stuff. Oliver and Laurel are stuck down underground. Diggle's trying to set up the bombs and then gets attacked by Isabel, who is dressed like Ravager. That's the name of the character in the comic books that she is dressed up as, and I'll go into a little more detail in our references portion here in a few minutes. But then Felicity's working hard, and she gets this phone call from Star Labs. I like how it just says, Star Labs. It's like, I got to set up some stuff on my phone, so when somebody calls me, it's like, oh, look, it says the president, and it just says the president, So it's, maybe I'll set you up that way, so whenever you call me, it'll say the president.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
That'd be great.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's cool. But then she's like, she answers it first off. It's like, you don't have to answer it right away. And then she's like, this is really not a good time. And I'm like, I laughed because I'm like, it's a perfectly good time because they're probably calling to tell her, hey, your order's ready. we've got a bunch of, I'm sorry, if you don't want the stuff that cures that Mirakuru, that's fine. We can just give it to somebody else.
Surprised it wasn't one of those automatic systems. This is the Star Labs pharmacy. Your prescription is ready.
Please pick it up between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. Yeah. So I just thought that because she knew it was Cisco, who was Cisco Ramon, who was on the other week on The Man Under the Hood, and the one that she gave the sample of Mirakuru to make a cure. So obviously, I mean, Star Labs has got, tons of machines that go ping, I'm sure, so that there is a lot of capability for them to make a cure. So I'm sure they're going to come through. I'm sure that's what that's all about. It'll be interesting to see if like, no, we couldn't do anything, or we need another sample, or we need, something else. Like maybe they have to take Roy in to hook him up to something. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. But I think it's just going to be something as simple as, yeah, we got the cure. You guys just have to come get it. And it'll be Felicity having to go get it because nobody else is available.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right. I'm sorry. Laurel's everyone else is dead. I can.
Yeah. And, I mean, Dig, oh, by the way, Dig was running around pretty well for having that stanchion hit him in the head the other week. That when Roy hit him in the head with that, you know, the metal pole and stuff like that.
Clearly, there's some high, you know, very high powered painkillers because Oliver was moving around pretty well too.
Oh, that's true. Right, I completely forgot that he had kind of a bad knee. They didn't even. Wow.
He didn't even limp.
See, they didn't even touch on any of that. I would have thought they would have done something else with that.
That's a good brace.
Yeah. I just remember last week I was like, okay, so this is going to be – I completely forgot about that. Thank you for bringing that up. I was thinking that's going to be key, the whole fact that his knee is not working properly. That's going to be key for these next couple episodes, but they didn't even bring it up, so –
No, but he wasn't doing well in the fight, so it might have had something to do with it, but they didn't point it out or anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, was there anything else I'm forgetting, or we? I think that pretty much covers
we covered
stuff.
most of the points. I noticed that there were a lot of flashbacks in this episode, and they were all short. They were just like little, just several seconds long, almost. Some of the snippets I wrote them down. There wasn't much to each one of them. They just had them more often, it felt like. And I also noticed, not that this means anything, but the opening Arrow title card, I guess you call it, it did not occur until 12 minutes into the episode. And that may be the longest I've ever noticed that it happened.
Interesting.
When it happened, I'm like, wait. Did that just happen again, or was that the first time? But it was the first time that it had come on. So you know, overall, I thought it was a good setup episode, like I said at the beginning. With the other stories that it's going to go, the last two episodes of the season, I think it will fit and flow a lot better because it'll build up to what's coming in the next two, which I think is going to be huge.
Yeah, I agree. I also wanted to point out, I thought it was a funny scene with Thea when she was waiting at the, it was the train station. She's like, can't I board yet? And it's like, no, ma'am, they're boarding business class, you know, coach boards in a minute, which is hilarious because...
I'm sorry,
you know,
what's business class? I don't...
She's, you know, she's so used to, I guess, having money and being, you know, rich. It just seems like she's kind of out of touch with how the whole process works. I just thought that was a little amusing. And maybe I'm reading a little bit more into that, but I thought that's kind of what they were trying to point out with that sequence. And then, of course, there's a guy there. It's like, you know, 9 o'clock, right on the nose. Oh, time for me to go wrestle a cop. So.
That was good, though. Good build up in timing. I like that. Other people in the city. Clearly, it's going to be a lot more difficult than he was hoping.
Oh yeah, it's you didn't think it was going to be that easy, did you?
No. So,
well, let's see. I want to touch on a couple of the references here. So one was Isabel is dressed up as this character called Ravager. In the comics, Ravager is actually Slade Wilson's daughter. Rose, and I think I hadn't touched on I touched on some other of Slade's kids, and I think I had missed Rose when we were talking about this previously, but the fact that Isabel might be Slade's daughter in the show, I don't think that's been proven out yet, even though she's dressed up like a character that in the comics is Slade's daughter. Boy, that's really confusing. So this is a character called Ravager, and she's like the second or third person to use that name after Slade's son dresses up as a male version of Ravager. And I think that was in the early Teen Titans. That's where these characters are mostly seen. And then the only other reference that I saw, and I had to look up some information on this because I have no idea about this, I will tell you, but Blood's bodyguard is named Clinton Hogue. And in the comics, this character is the leader of a group of animal-human hybrids called the Splinter Folk, which are characters that mutated themselves in order to access a primordial force that connects all animal life. So, and that's, in the comics, they ally themselves with Brother Blood, who was trying to replace Animal Man as the Avatar of the Red. The Red being this primordial, the name for this primordial force. So I had read Animal Man for a while, but obviously not anything that pertained to the Splinter Folk. So that's pretty much it. The only other thing was kind of the reference to Cisco from Star Labs. So actually, I think that was, you know, that's about all the references we've got then.
Yeah, there weren't too many this week.
Yeah, I don't know if, I mean, I actually had to, like I said, I had to look these up, so I didn't see that anybody else came up with much other ones, you know, other than like some stuff we've talked about before, like Argus and Amanda Waller and things like that. But like, even the, oh, I guess the street name did mean something. They mentioned something about a Velox Street, which is, it's a Vancouver area rugby club, the Velox Valhallians. So maybe that was a shout out for that. So
all right, go Valhallians.
I also wanted to just mention that we got a really nice email from listener Caitlin, who was talking about the fact that the Justice League movie was pretty much more or less confirmed the other earlier this week. And how the Arrow and Flash TV show might fit into the whole DC universe, and would they end up using Stephen Amell and Grant Gustin as the actors in the movies, or would they just dismiss having Green Arrow and the Flash, or this Green Arrow and this Flash on the show, and maybe if they had to use a Flash, recast somebody else that would be a little bit older. A lot of good points that she brought up there. And it was, like I said, it was really well thought out. She had links and everything in there. And it was an interesting read, and I am looking forward to see what shakes out from this. I mean, I would like to see a little more cohesiveness between all of DC's filmic enterprises.
Yes. And, you know, honestly, I don't know where this is going. I don't think we have enough really information on their plans, you know, how Marvel's kind of laid out phases of how they've been doing that. And we don't really know where DC's going with this, and it'll be a while before we do. But it just seems to me like they do have some established universes that would fit perfectly fine in the cinematic universes that they're creating with Man of Steel and mm-hmm. and the Batman one that's upcoming. So I'm all for it, actually. I would like to see Arrow and Flash as part of this. She mentioned mm-hmm. that, you know, he seems so, the Flash, Grant Gustin, seems so young, but Flash has always kind of been a well, not always, but in a lot of incarnations, Flash has been a young hero compared to some of the others.
Wally West version of the Flash has always kind of seemed to be younger. I think Barry Allen's always been, Barry Allen was always a little more mature.
Sure.
I think. She mentions that. And she also said she really, because of the references they've had for like Bloodhaven in the Arrow show, she really wants to see a shout out to Gotham or Metropolis at some point, which I think would be cool. And that would really help cement Arrow in the larger DC universe.
Agreed.
And to this point, I don't remember them mentioning either of those before, but that's a good point. I mean, I think that's kind of a no-brainer. I think they should mention that. But they are, you know, they're tying in kind of the middle-level DC characters. They haven't kind of moved up to referencing that top tier. And maybe that's because it's off-limits or they've got other plans. You know, who knows?
Yeah, well, hey, you know, with the Justice League, they've got a lot of different options, and I think they should use the ones that are successful right now. I think it would be great.
Yeah.
So, and finally, of course, she referenced Katie Cassidy in hopes that there's a Partridge Family reference somewhere in Arrow in the future.
That I did not know. That was a great addition. I never even thought that she was David Cassidy's daughter. I hadn't even kind of put that together. So thank you very much, Caitlin, for pointing that out.
I'm all for the Partridge Family. Let's go for it. Yes. Maybe Danny Bonaducci could play a villain.
Oh, yeah. He could. Yeah, he would be a good villain. I wonder what we could. I was going to say if we can get Ruben back, but I think he's dead. So.
They've got a lot of people. They'll come up with something.
Yeah, exactly. So. Well, anyway, that's a lot of good information here, and hopefully we can get some more references. But I think in the next couple episodes, but I think they're really heading out of the season with a bang here, and we'll just see what comes. Only two more episodes left for the season, and I know I for one am looking forward to how they're going to wrap this all up and what kind of the big cliffhanger is going to be. Well, maybe not necessarily a cliffhanger, but what's kind of the revelation that's going to leave us for the summer. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
I don't know if I'm looking forward to it or not, but it'll be good either way.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll make me sad because it'll mean that we're done for the year and we have to wait, you know, 5 or 6 months until they come back. But and you know, for now, that's all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Hope you enjoyed it, and we if you did enjoy this episode, please make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. We'd like to see a lot more reviews up there. You can also contact us by email. Just send us an email like Caitlin did, greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or you can catch us on Twitter @greenjusticepod, and you can also visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And you can also check out the other podcast that Josh and I host called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is about the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. television show, which if you haven't checked that out in a while or you haven't checked that out, that show is getting really good. I know we're both enjoying it immensely, and that's also available here at randomchatter.com. And of course, if you enjoyed this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed the city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.